Today is February 28th in the 23rd of Shvat, and we are doing our little retrospective of Shaul and kind of introducing David HaMelech in contrast to that. And this shir was inspired by a shir by Rav Moshe Weinberger, who's the Mashgiach Ruchani at Yeshiva University. He also is a Rav in the Five Towns. He has a shul called Esh Kodesh, and I've been listening to him for years. So he did, if you look it up, I think it's called something about leadership, this shir that he gave. And it was really beautiful, and he talked about comparing Noach and Shaul on the one side with Avraham and David on the other side. So when you think about Noach, he introduced it by saying, somebody came and asked him, are there any sources that tell us that Noach was actually a good person? Because like once you start delving into Noach, you start learning some not so nice things, and you know, what is it? So the rab said, well, there's this book, it's called the Chumash, and it says, Noach ish tzaddik. Noach was a tzaddik. So I think that's a pretty good book, a pretty good source. So it's funny. But what is certainly seems clear in the Chumash, despite the fact that Noach was a tzaddik, or maybe, as we'll see, because he was a tzaddik, he was unable to influence anybody around him. Midrashim say that it took him, I forgot the exact number, but I think over 100-something years to build the Teva, the Ark. And so the question is, why? And the Midrash says, so that people would ask him, why are you doing this? And said he'd have a chance to encourage them to do tshuva. But nobody believed him. He wasn't able to impact anybody. And it's sort of similar to Shaul, unfortunately. And then on the other side, you have Avraham, who coined the word iconoclast. It's based on him of smashing idols. And probably is, to date, the number one influencer in the world. I mean, to introduce ethical monotheism into the world and the notion that God is involved in your life. And David HaMelech, very similar, especially compared to Shaul. I mean, on a somewhat smaller scale than Avraham. He's not the father of three religions, but definitely it's, you know, interesting how we still speak of David HaMelech, even though you could be from David HaMelech and still not in line to be Mashiach if you're not from Shlomo HaMelech. And you could be from Shlomo HaMelech and not in line if you're not from Rechavam. So it's not just David HaMelech, but yet that's how we refer to it. So it's also interesting. Okay, so all of these sources, or most of these sources that we're going to look at, are all going to lead up to this beautiful Hasidish text from the Noam Elimelech. So they'll all come together in that. Okay, so here's the first text. This is a Midrash in Breishit Rabbah on Noach. And the Pasuk says, Tamim haya bedor atav. So Noach was a tzaddik, and he was tam, which we usually translate as perfect or pure, simple. Sometimes even on Pesach Seder, you have the simple son, tam. But some sort of perfection in his generation. And of course, there's the famous Rashi there that asks, why do we need to qualify it with in his generation? Couldn't we say he was tamim in any case? And Rashi explains based on the Midrash that it's either praiseworthy that had he been in any other generation, he also would have been just as great, or leganai, not so praiseworthy, only in compared to the people in his generation was he so great. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. So we are focusing here on the word haya. So the Midrash says something strange. Amar bi Yochanan, kol mi shen amar bo haya, anybody for whom it says in describing them, the word haya, was. Okay, this three-letter word. Mitchilato ve'ad sofo hu tzadik. That means, from beginning to end, he was a tzaddik. So he was born a tzaddik. He is not a Baal Tshuva. He is, from the minute he came out of the womb, he was righteous. Okay. And Hativunne, they challenged him. V'hakativ, but there's a pasuk, Hakativ Echad, there's a pasuk concerning Avraham. Hayah Avraham. Avraham was. Vayirash et ha'aretz. So in describing Avraham, it says, Haya. Me'ata hu tchilato v'hu sofo. Can we say that Avraham was a tzaddik from the beginning to end? Do you know, can you anticipate why we can't? Okay, so let's keep going. Amar lahun, af hi lo tivra, deha Rabbi Levi b'shem Reish Lakish amar ben gimel shanim hekir Avraham et baro. Avraham was not born, was not created tivra. He wasn't created a tzaddik. Because Rabbi Levi said in the name of Reish Lakish, and if you remember, we talked about Reish Lakish last week. It actually didn't make it on the tape, so maybe I'll repeat it. So Reish Lakish said he was 3 years old, Avraham, when he recognized Hashem. The Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yochanan Tarvayu, and these two rabbis, Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yochanan, both of them said, Amrin, ben arba'im v'chet shana hikir Avraham et baro. No, he was 48 when he recognized Hashem. 48, I think, is the age they put him at the fiery furnace when he was thrown in by Nimrod. So it's very interesting. We're seeing here that Noach was born knowing God and recognizing God and being a tzaddik, whereas Avraham, it took him until he was either 3 or perhaps 48 before he had any recognition or acknowledgement of Hashem. As Rav Moshe Weinberger said, he was doing the Ur costumes thing. Like, he was living the life in ancient Acadia, you know, going to the Acadian nightclubs and Acadian movies, and that's how Rav Moshe Weinberger put it. And then, at some point, he had this recognition that there's a better way to live your life. So he was not tzaddik mitzchilato from ad sofo, from the beginning to the end. Okay, so now we ask the question, uman ani mekayem haya. So why is he described with this word haya? Shehaya mitukan lehadrich kol haolam kulo b'tshuva. So the word haya here is not about him being a tzaddik from beginning to end. Rather, it's about him being fixed or prepared to lead the entire world in how to do tshuva. Mm-hmm. Okay? And this should also, and we'll see by the end of this year, that this should also remind us of David HaMelech. And not about Shaul, because that was really Shaul's weakness. Okay. Good. Now we have the Gemara, where we're going to introduce Shaul and David. Okay, and this is from Masechet Yoma. Yoma is dealing with Yom Kippur. So the rabbis ask the question, Mipnei ma lo nimshecha malchut beit Sha'ul. So why didn't Sha'ul's reign continue? Right? It was completely cut off. He didn't even, there were no grandchildren even from Michal, his daughter, who was married to David. And here's a very strange answer. Mipnei shelo hayabo shum dofi. Because he didn't have any flaw in his ancestry, in his family. He was completely perfect. And that's why his reign was not allowed to continue. It's very strange. Damar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehot Sadak. So the rabbi said, Ein ma'amidim parnes al hatzibur, ela imken kupa shel shratzim tluya lo me'acharav. You should not put up a leader on the public unless he has a kupa shel shratzim, a box of creepy, crawly, disgusting things hanging after him. Okay? She'im tazuach dato alav, because if he gets too haughty, omrin lo, we say to him, Chazor la'acharecha, look behind you. It's crazy. Right? I mean, it's just insane. No leader should be in a generation unless he has creepy, crawly, disgusting things trailing after him. So this reminds me, in Masechet Brachot, in the fourth parak, is the famous, very famous story of Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua, where Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi and Rabbi Yoshua was the Av Beit Din. So they were like president and prime minister, sort of. And Rabban Gamliel had more power, had more official power than Rabbi Yoshua. So there were several cases where Rabbi Yoshua disagreed with Rabban Gamliel. And this is all post-destruction, like within the next generation post-destruction. And so Rabban Gamliel's main focus was on keeping the Jewish people unified. So it sort of justifies his behavior if there was any dissent to any of his disagreements, especially on really important things. One of them was in terms of calculating Rosh Chodesh Tishrei one year, which was Rosh Hashanah. So Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua had different dates. So that would have created a complete schism of everything. So Rabban Gamliel demanded from Rabbi Yoshua that he come to him on Yom Kippur with his staff and I think food to show that he acceded to Rabban Gamliel's notion of when Yom Kippur was and when Rosh Chodesh had been. The case in the Gemara here with this story is whether or not Mariv is an obligation or optional. And when we say optional, it's not really optional and it's too complex to get into now. And Rabban Gamliel made Rabbi Yoshua stand up and then never said, you may now be seated. And Rabbi Yoshua was much older. So the other rabbis had had enough of Rabban Gamliel's treatment of Rabbi Yoshua and they deposed him. And then they have a long discussion about who to put up instead of him, and it's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who is famous that you know in the Haggadah. He says, I was like a 70-year-old man. Mm-hmm. And so the whole, that is all based on that he was actually 17 and he was too young to be mm-hmm. made the head. And so miraculously overnight he grew stripes of gray in his beard. So anyway, Rabban Gamliel decides to apologize to Rabbi Yoshua. And Rabban Gamliel is a descendant from Hillel. He's like he's like rabbinic royalty, okay? And he goes to Rabbi Yoshua's house. And Rabbi Yoshua was a smith, a blacksmith. And apparently Rabban Gamliel had never been to Rabbi Yoshua's house. And in ancient times, especially if you were a smith, your walls were coated with black, okay? So he sees this, and he says to Rabbi Yoshua, oh, I never knew you were a smith, which is so much more loaded than just not knowing what kind of profession he has. It's because it's he didn't know he even had a profession, because Rabban Gamliel has the luxury of just sitting and learning Torah all day, whereas Rabbi Yoshua has to work to be able to afford to sit and learn Torah. So Rabbi Yoshua says, Oy lador sha'ata parnasav. Woe to the generation that you are its provider. That you don't know what it means to toil, to work, to be able to learn Torah. It's just so powerful. I don't know if you remember years ago when George Bush, I forgot if it was the father or the son, must have been the son, I guess, had never been to like a checkout line in the supermarket. Do you remember this?
No.
And he was trying to get to know, I guess, America. And so there was a political cartoon in the paper where it shows him being dropped down from a helicopter in front of, like, working-class American house in a bubble. So the Talmud, the rabbis, knew, you know, generations before, and we see even before that with Shaul versus David, of what it takes to be a leader. And what it takes is a kupa shel shratzim, which is just like unbelievable. Whoa. Maybe we should shut the door.
Yeah.
Got that. Thank you. Okay. Oh, and I didn't continue the rest of the Gemara, but I have it in the English. Maybe that's just a commentary. This is why David's kingdom lasted while Shaul's did not, as David descended from a family with problematic ancestry, namely Tamar and Ruth. Okay? And we're going to see a little bit more about Tamar.
Stacey, yeah. It would have been pretty problematic, I think, had
Shaul's line continued when David was trying to kind of ascend to his position. I think people might have had conflicting, like if any of the sons had survived.
Right.
If there would have been a real political...
Yeah, we're going to see one does, and there is a political conflict. But remember that the only reason David was anointed in the first place was because of Shaul's failings. So he, long before David was anointed, Shaul was already told he wouldn't continue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and we'll see that conflict when we start Shmuel Bet. Okay. Oh, there's one source I found that this Kupashel Shratzim, this problematic ancestry, can only come from your mother's side because then it won't be as well known.
Maybe all of the Shidduchim, people who are looking into Shidduchim should recognize that maybe a little problems is a good thing.
Right. No, I say this to parents all the time when they're worried about their kids who are rebelling a little bit. I say everyone wants a Yosef HaTzadik because Yosef is considered the archetype of a tzadik. But Mashiach is coming from David HaMelech, from Yehuda, from the Baal Tshuva. So by like, it's almost as if by trying to guarantee that your child is not exposed to anything and like lives this perfect life, you're basically limiting his job perspectives and excluding Mashiach.
But isn't the mother supposed to already know that she has?
Right.
Although we all sort of...
Okay. Oh, but on the mother thing, because I don't know... Well, I guess it would have been similar in ancient times. Most of us change our last names. So that's why you can hide things better from your mother's side. Okay. So now a commentary on this Gemara. This is from the Beit HaBechira LeMe'iri, which you can read about on the last page. Rabbi Menachem ben Shlomo Meiri, so he was born in 1249 and died in 1315, and he was a leading rabbi in France. And this is his commentary on the Mishnah and Talmud. So he says, "Ein ra'ui lehamid parnes al hatzibor, ela mi shenoda mimidotav, anav v'shafel ruach." V'savlan. Okay, so you can't put up a leader of the generation onto the public unless it's known that he has humility and another word for humility. What's another word in English for humility?
Modesty.
Okay. And he's tolerant. Mipnei shehu tzarich lihinaheg im habriot bedrachim mishtanim. Lekama gvanim, ze becha v'ze becha. Because, and the Meiri has another beautiful insight, he will need to interact with humanity in different ways, in very many different shades, with this one in this way, and this one in this way. V'lehit ahev im kol echad. And he'll have to be in love, lehit ahev, with each one of them, kol echad mehem. Kifi midotav, according to his measurements or attributes. V'im hem v'makom she'ein motzim kach, v'alkom panim tzrichim limnot, avirei lev v'azei metach yizaru shelo limnot. Anashim tekifim kol kach, v'chol inyan. Okay, and if you don't find a person like this, who's so humble and able to relate to each person where they are, then... they should still have a good heart, I think, and you need to be careful from haughtiness, that you don't appoint violent people, I think. Sheyu sferim al ato minui, shehe muchzak biyadan le'olam, v'shehem harim lekach yoter al shcheneham machmat takfam. And they can't think that they're better than other people just because they were appointed to this position. And they can't think that the level of their fathers is what helped them. Because this, if they think it's because of their yichus, their ancestry, then that'll just make them even more prideful. v'yashmi alehem et harishonot derech tzachot v'derech haflaga, and they're just going to create strife into the public. And that's why they said in mamanim parnesa tzibor ela imkem kupa shel shratzim tlurai la'acharav, and that's why we can't appoint someone unless they have this box of disgusting creepy crawly things hanging after them. Klomar afal pi shehu hagun ba'atzmo, even though he seems fitting for this role, she'im tazuach da'ato alav v'yitga'el atzibur, if he gets haughty and prideful over the population, shelo l'shem shamayim, and it's not for the sake of heaven, omrim lo chazor ladun et atzmecha, you need to go judge yourself, v'habet al achareha, and look after yourself. And that's why they asked, why didn't Shaul's kingship continue? Because he didn't have any flaw in his family tree. That means to say, dofi shel mishpacha, a flaw in his family, sorry. And it's because of this that he was prideful on the tzibur. And he was no longer doing things l'shem shamayim. And we saw that, right? How his paranoia caused him to not be mindful of his true purpose in serving the Jewish people. Any questions on that?
No, it seems so obvious. Like, it seems so obvious. If he's becoming haughty, then he doesn't feel he's not acting as a messenger. He's acting in his own right.
Right.
And if he can't have sympathy and empathy, he can't be the leader. So it's all...
Exactly. Okay. Good. Okay, so now this is from Masachet Nazir, which deals with Nazirim, the people who don't cut their hair. Amar Ula. So Ula said, Tamar Zinta, Zimri Zina. Okay, so you know Tamar, right? She dressed up as a prostitute when Yehuda wasn't fulfilling his end of the bargain and responsibility towards her as the widow of his deceased sons. And Zimri, anybody know who Zimri is? So Zimri is the Nasi, the head of Shimon. It's in the end of Parshat Balak, beginning of Parshat Pinchas. Now, does it sound familiar? He's the one that took a Midianite woman in front of the Ohel Moed and engaged in disgusting activity. And Pinchas became a zealot in a good way by making a shish kebab out of them. Okay, so Tamar Zinta, Yatsu Mimena Malachim V'Nevi'im. When Tamar acted as a prostitute, kings and prophets came out of her. Zimri Zina, when Zimri prostituted, Naflu Alav Kama Revavot Mi'Israel, a plague was started, and there were, I think, 24,000. It's the same number as with Rabbi Akiva's students, and there's a lot of parallels there, that died. Amar Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So this leads into a really interesting conversation, and we're going to need this to understand the Chassidus we're going to learn. Gedola Avera Lishma Mimitzvah Shelo Lishma. So a sin, how do they translate it? A sin for the sake of a mitzvah, for the sake of heaven. And she wanted to have children, and she was doing the right thing, and she knew she was destined to have children through Yehuda's line. That is better than a mitzvah that's not for the sake of heaven. Okay, so this Sfarya translation has commentary included in it. So she did it for a mitzvah to have children, and the kings of the house of David descended from her. King David's lineage traces back to Tamar's son Peretz. And she also merited to be the ancestor of prophets, Isaiah, who is related to the royal family. Whereas Zimri engaged in licentious sexual intercourse for the purpose of a transgression, 24,000, it's in the translation, sorry. So here we see that it's dependent on your intentions. So greater is a transgression committed for its own sake, for the sake of heaven, than a mitzvah performed not for its own sake. But then we have a conflicting statement, right? You probably all know it. Masha lo lishma ba lishma. So Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Leolam and also Leolam Yasok Adam B'Torah Mitzvot Afilu Shelo Yilishman. Everybody should be engaged in Torah and Mitzvot, even if you don't have the right intentions. Shemitoch Shelo Lishman Ba Lishman. Because if you start out doing it for the wrong intentions, it'll end up in the right intentions. You've heard this before,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So that we're going to leave that as a question, but I just wanted to include it here so that you would see the rabbis didn't ignore that seemingly contradictory thing. So they go on to, I skipped the part about Ya'el. Ya'el is the one in Shoftim who seduced Sisera in order to kill him. He was on his way with Devorah and Barak. And she, according to the Gemara, she actually did have to sleep with him in order to be able to distract him and then kill him. She killed him with a tent peg in his head. She's praised in Midrash Eshet Chayil for using a tent peg instead of a sword because it's not a weapon and women shouldn't be using weapons. Okay. So we see here in the continuation just on this notion of doing a mitzvah not for its own sake. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Leolam Yasok Adam B'Torah Mitzvot Afilu Shelo Lishman. So repeating the previous sentiment that Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, that somebody should always be involved in Torah and Mitzvot even if it's not for the right intention. Shemitok Shelo Lishman Ba Lishman, because from not doing with the right intention, if you continue doing it, it'll come to be the right intention. Shebiskvar Membet 42 Karbanot Sheikriv Balak Harasha. Balak, the king of Moab, had Bilam, the Navi of the non-Jews, he wanted him to curse the Jews, if you remember that story, and he ended up making 42 sacrifices for completely the wrong intention. Zacha ve'yetza mimenu Rut. He merited, and Rut came out of him. Ve'amar v'yosi barabi chanina, Rut bat beno shel Eglon, melech Moab haita. Because Rut, we trace her ancestry back to Eglon, who descended from Balak, both kings of Moab. Okay, so any questions on this notion of a avera for the right intention versus a mitzvah for the wrong intention? Okay, good. Okay, so Noam Elimelech, so you can read about him. He was born in 1717 in Poland and was a disciple of the Magid Rav Dov Ber of Mezrich, and the Magid of Mezrich was the direct disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. Right, oh, he says that. And he wandered around for 8 years, and his brother was Rav Zusha. You know the story of Rav Zusha? He's the one who goes to Shemayim and says, they won't ask me, why weren't you like Avraham? Why weren't you like Moshe? They'll just ask me, why weren't you like Zusha? So these were two amazing brothers. And from him came his students, the Chozev Lublin, the Magin of Koznitz, Rav Avram Yoshua Heschel of Avda, and he died in 1787, and his son, Rabbi Eliezer, succeeded him. There's a few families who have kids named Eli or Noam that are descended from him. Okay, so this is based on Parshat Naso, and in Naso, it's the second Parsha in Bamidbar, and it's spelling out all the duties of the formation of the tribes as they walk through the desert around the Mishkan, and then the duties of the Kohanim, and also of each of the Levite families and what their duties would be. And Kahat, who's one of the sons of Levi, sorry, and that's actually where Korach comes from. So they had the most special duty that they actually carried on their shoulders, the Mishkan, after the Kohanim had already packed everything up. So they still couldn't touch the holy vessels, but they're the ones who carried it. So the Pasuk says, Ulevnei Kahat lo natan. So Kahat did not get wagons to move all the vessels through the desert because they had to Bekataf Yisu, because they carried it on their shoulders. Okay. Nira Lefaresh ki ne'amar etzel Sha'ul. We can relate this pasuk to Sha'ul. Meshichmo umala gavoa mikol ha'am. because Shaul was head and shoulders above the nation. So we have two words for shoulders. We have Katef, Ktafayim, which is what we say in modern Hebrew, and we have Shechem, being another word for shoulder. You see it when Hagar is exiled by Abraham and she puts Yishmael on her shoulder, if you remember. It's also the name of Shechem. It's the same name who raped Dinah. There's lots. Rabbi David Foreman has all sorts of parallels. V'amar Shmuel HaNavi, Harita Masher Barcharbo Hashem Ki Ein Kamohu. So Shmuel, when Shaul, and this is what we mentioned last week, this is during his Perek, this is all in Perek Yud. Right, so this is when he's first appointed by the lottery. And Shmuel, the Navi, says, here is, this is who God chose, and there is no one like him. Okay, so that phrase, Ein Kamohu, is going to come into play later. Ube Gemara, and we learned in the Gemara that we learned, Mipnei ma lo nimshecha malchut Shaul, why wasn't Shaul's kingship continued? Mipnei shelo nimtza bo shum dofi, because he had no flaw in his ancestry. Betamuha, and this is really questionable. Adaraba, the opposite should be true. Bishvil shelo haya bo shum dofi, because he had no flaw in his ancestry, haya tov sheyimashech adayad. It should have been better that his kingship should have continued. Right? That would be our logic. Vinyara, Kiba Gemara, and here's the second Gemara that we have in Nazir that we learned. Ita gedola avera lishma. It's better that you do a sin for the sake of heaven. V'kashe maze shaychut etzel avera lishma. V'chi mi tziva la'asot avera shehe shayach etzla lishma. Okay, this is a really good question. This is a difficulty. What does sinning have to do with for the sake of heaven? Because who would ever command somebody to do, how could God possibly ever command somebody to do a sin that there would be within this sin some sort of sake of heaven? Do you see? God would never command somebody to do a sin, so therefore doing a sin would never be for the sake of heaven. Okay? Aval. Nir'ed ha'emet hu kach. Okay, so now the Noam Elimelech is going to tell us what the truth is. Tihine kol ma shebara ha-kodesh baruch hu be'olamo lo bar'o ki'im l'hativ l'bor av. Everything that God created in his world, he only created for the good of his creations. Al yidei hashpa'ot ha-shafa mi'ila letata. By way of this flow, this divine flow from above, ila, like aliyah, letata, to below. Ela, shilize tzarich hitaruta de letata al yedei mayin nukvin. But in order to receive this heavenly flow from above to below, we need to do an itaruta de letata, which is an awakening from below. These are very Kabbalistic terms. And Purim is seen as like the ultimate awakening from below, where we humans took charge so that there would be a flow from above. You see, as opposed to Pesach, which is seen as the ultimate awakening from above, where we received this flow, not necessarily by our own merit. Okay? But in this figuration, the way the Noam Elimelech is spelling it out, in order for us to receive this heavenly flow from above, we need to have an awakening from below by way of Mayim Nukvim, which is the feminine waters, and that I don't know anything about. Okay? I mean, I've read it a million times, but I just wouldn't be able to explain it to you. And I don't, not because I know what it is and I can't explain it, I don't even know what it is. Okay. V'zeh haya hakivun b'netinat ha-Torah li-Yisrael ובנסים ונפלאות שעשה אימנו, כדי שנאמין בו יתברך באהבה ויראה. And this was the intention of giving the Torah to Israel in all of the miracles and wondrous things that he did with us, so that we would believe in him, blessed be he, with love and fear. ונוכל לקבל טובתיו השפעה העליונה. and so that we would be able to receive his goodness and this divine flow from above. Nimsa hashefa eina ki im al yedei hatzadik hamashpia. And now this is like ultimate Chassidus. The only, according to Chassidus, the way to key into this divine heavenly flow is through a tzaddik. Okay? And that's why Chassidus is centered around the Rebbe, because that's your ticket to this divine flow. Okay? V'hatzadik asher hu rotze lehashpia lebnei adam, and the tzaddik that wants to bring this flow down to mankind, tzarich hu ledavek atzmo imahem. That tzaddik needs to be glued to his people. He needs to forge a relationship with his people in order for him to merit to be the one to bring down this heavenly flow. Kedei lehashpia kol davar hatzorach letovatam, in order to cause to flow everything that they need for their own good. Ki mi sherotze la'asot eze tova lechavero, eno yachol la'asot lo hatova b'shleimut, ki im al yedei sheyidabek imo be'achdut gamor. So now he brings it into the realm of us regular people. The one who wants to do something good for his friend, he can't do this in complete goodness unless he is stuck or, like, you know, glued, that he's has a strong connection with him with complete unity. Ve'im ken hatzadik tzarik ledavek atzmo b'kol Yisrael, and if this is so, that tzadik needs to I keep forgetting what word I'm using, but stick himself to forge a relationship with all of Israel, kedei lehativ lahem, in order to make it good for them. Ve'echu oseh im habat avera chalila. Okay, so the tzaddik has this responsibility that if he wants to bring goodness to all of mankind, he needs to have a relationship with each individual, mankind. So how does he forge a relationship, the Rabbi Elimelech asks, with somebody who's a sinner, chas v'shalom? Okay, do you see? Like, how could a tzaddik connect with a sinner? Halo af shehu ba'al avera, af al piken tzarich lahashpa'a v'lechiyot. Even though he's a sinner, he still needs this divine flow and to live. Ve'ech yitkasher ha-tzaddik imo. How will the tzaddik make a connection with him? L'zeh amra ha-gemara. And that's why the Gemara says, Gidola avera lishma. Better a sin for the sake of heaven. Shehatzadik oseh gam kein eza avera. That the tzadik should also do some sort of sin. Ela shehi lishma. But the sin that the tzadik will put himself into will be for the sake of heaven. Ve'al yedei zeh yachol hitkasher im habal avera. And by way of the tzaddik committing a sin, he'll be able to connect to the sinner, gamkein, also, ve'yativ lo gamkein, and he'll be able to make it good even for the sinner. Ve'inyan avera lishma hukach. And now he's going to explain what is in a sin for the sake of heaven. Kamo etzel Sha'ul. It's like Sha'ul, where it's written, ve'yirav benachal. So this is when Sha'ul was on his way to fight against Amalek. It says that he struggled at the river. And it's a very weird way, and we spent a lot of time on this. Vidarshu. And so the rabbis expanded on this, also in Yoma. Shevrav al iske nachal, sorry. That he was arguing on the matter of the river. And the other place where a nachal is mentioned is in Egel Arufa, which is a cow that you break its neck when you find somebody who's been murdered along the way and you don't know who killed him. So you take a cow and you break its neck. It's a lot more involved than that. Okay? So, im al nefesh echad. So if for the sake of one soul we do this whole thing because we're so concerned about life, behema machata. Now Sha'ul has been commanded to kill all the animals of Amalek, and he asks, why would I have to take the animal? They didn't sin. So he's having this moral, ethical argument in himself about this command he's been given by God in the war with Amalek. V'haya nir'elo ze she'yarog ha-behemot shel Amalek avera gadol. And it appears to him that the one who would kill the animals of Amalek would be committing a big sin. Aval im haya yachol la'asot avera lishma, haya osev v'horeget ha-behemot. But if he would have been able to bring himself to commit a sin for the sake of heaven, meaning in his mind it would have been a sin to kill the animals, but it actually would have been a sin for the sake of heaven because God did command him to do it, then he would have killed the animals. Gam kein kevan shetzivah hamarchom baruch hu, because God commanded him. Malacha shenira lecha avera, yeah, avera lishma. If God commands you to do something that appears to you to be a sin, then it can actually be a sin for the sake of heaven. Ela shemirov tzidkutav, shelo haya bo shum dofi, but from Shaul's complete righteousness, that he had no flaw in his family tree, lo haya yachol asot afilu avera lishma, he wasn't able to bring himself to do even a sin for the sake of heaven. Umimela kevan shelo haya yachol asot avera lishma, and in and of itself, since he couldn't do a sin for the sake of heaven, lo haya yachol hitchaber im haba'al avera lahamshich aleihem hashpa'a. Therefore, he was never able to connect with a sinner to bring this heavenly flow onto him. Isn't that amazing? You have a question?
Go ahead. First of all, is it really a sin if it was commanded?
So in Shaul's, this is how the Rebbe is saying a righteous person can commit a sin if God tells you to do it. And so even though Shaul is reasoning in his mind that it's a sin, it's not actually a sin, like you said, but he's reasoned that it is. And because of his complete righteousness, he couldn't even bring himself to do this. I think this is actually a problem in, as a hopefully future yoetzet, that, you know, girls are raised to be good girls, and then suddenly their wedding night, they have to do what their entire life has been considered a sin. I think it's similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
They just have to get over themselves to a certain extent. I'm saying that harshly. But, because now it's become a command. That which was a sin before has now become a mitzvah.
Right.
And so it could be...
because the circumstances change. So
right.
It went from being a sin to a mitzvah.
Right, by virtue of being married. So that's how in my mind I sort of understood this. Normally it's a sin to randomly kill animals, I guess. But in this case it's a mitzvah. But Shaul couldn't bring himself to do this mitzvah that he associated as an avera.
What about the leader of Amalek? He spared him too.
Right, that's true also. Yeah.
It's kind of inconsistent.
Right, it's very inconsistent, which is why Haman comes out of that. Okay. Ki b'ma haya davuk imahem. So because he couldn't bring himself to do the sin l'shem shamayim, which was in his mind a sin, he then couldn't unite with the sinner. He had zero connection with them. V'hamelech tzarich lehativ l'kol Yisrael. But the king's responsibility is to make it good for all of Israel. L'kulam shavin, all of them equally, afilu l'balei avera, even to a sinner, chas v'chalila. God forbid there should be a sinner. V'zehu she'amru mipnei ma lo nimshecha, and this is why we said, why wasn't Shaul's kingship continued? Mipnei she'lo haya bo shum dofi, v'lo haya b'yado lehativ l'kulam, because he had no flaw in his family tree, and therefore, it was not in his hand to make things better for everybody, to make things good for everybody. V'chein nerali, u'l'ze ne'amar etzel Shaul. And that's also why it says, with regard to Shaul, shehaya meshichmo mala, gavoa mikol ha'am, that he was head and shoulders above the entire nation. Perush ki ha'shechem hem ha'ktafayim. So what's the explanation? The shechem is the ktafayim. They're both words for shoulders. V'nirmazim el ha'chasadim ha'migulim And this is hinting at revealed chesed, as it's written in Bereshit Kaf Bet, Vayashkem Avram Baboker, and Avram woke up early. So it's the same root, Hashkama Minyan, right, the early Minyan, and Shechem. So it's somehow the Rebbe is relating this to revealed chesed. Kanuda, as we know about Avraham waking up in the early in the morning, that's of course to do the Akedah, to sacrifice Yitzchak. V'Sha'ul im ha'chasadim shelo she'ya tzarich la'ashpia gvoha mikol ha'am. But Sha'ul, with his chasids, that it was necessary to make this divine flow, was higher than the whole nation. Ki lo haya bo shum dofi, because he had no flaw. He couldn't unite with them at all. Because he was actually above them. He was better than them in a certain sense. But being better than them is what made him not an effective king. And he couldn't influence over them. He had no influence over them. He had no, couldn't bring any divine flow on them. The only way he could have this influence over them, or this divine flow, and they're the same word, so I don't know how to translate it here, is if he were to unite with them. Perush shiyu tzadikim, the explanation of that is if they were tzadikim, ve'achdu imo b'madrigato, and then they would be able to unite with him on his level. Do you see? So the only people who could unite with him are would be those who were already on his level. They needed to go up to his level. He had no way of bringing himself down to their level. He wasn't able to do even the lightest sin. And this is why Shmuel said to the nation, see him because there's no one like him. Perush Riyahu Habata, Perush Tzrichim Atam Labit, Belit Kasherbo, Ki Ein Kamohu. You people, you the masses, you need to look to him and to connect to him because there's no one like him. She Ein Bodofi, he has no flaw. Vilo Yuchal Lahorid Alechem Lashbi Alechem, and he has no way of coming down to you. So you need to rise to him. You need to rise up to him, lekabel al yado hashefa shelachem, in order to receive from him this divine flow, your divine flow. Ki behechrach hashefa hochot al yadei hamelech, because this flow has to come from the king. Vizehu ulevinei kahat lo natan beketef yisu, and that's why with the children of Kahat, they weren't given wagons, and they had to carry it on their shoulders. Ki al b'nei kahat shayu tzadikim haya avodat ha-chodesh kal aleihem. Because the children of kahat were tzadikim, and the holy work began with them. Uma haya avodat ha-chodesh b'ketef yisu. And what was this holy work of carrying it on their shoulders? Shayu tzrichim lehorid ha-shefa hanikra ketef. Because they then... it's not enough to carry it on their shoulders. I think what the Rebbe is saying is that by virtue of having the job of carrying it on their shoulders, they're also going to need to put it down. They need to lower it. And then, so this is the flow that's called ketef, shoulder. Vidok hetev, and look into this well. Vitia matok lechayecha, and it will be sweet to your life. So, this is the difference between Sha'ul, who was so holy, and he was a level above everyone else. And as a result of that, he couldn't relate to the masses and, God forbid, sinners, because he had no way of uniting with them, no way of relating to them, and that's why his kingship couldn't continue. And that's why, I'm not going to do it now, we'll do it when we start next week, David HaMelech was the ultimate leader, because he could relate all too well to sinners. And he also became the model of how to do tshuva for those sinners. So not only could he come down to the sinners, but in coming down, he could bring them up. Okay, thanks.